Our final oral argument of the day is A23-1517. I hope I pronounced this right. Falvergiani versus Tabrizi. As counsel are getting settled, please remember the counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, counsel for the respondent 15 minutes, and finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. When you're settled, just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level, and please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Carlo Ficini, and I represent the appellant, Shima Shoji Falvergiani, in this matter. There are two issues before the court here today. The first is, did the district court abuse its discretion when it failed to factor in respondent's bonus income into the award of spousal maintenance, child support, or any other award for that matter, be it the dissipation of the marital assets, or marital estate, rather. And second, did the district court abuse its discretion when it asserted authority over gold coins of the parties that were essentially either dowry or marital gifts and therefore subject to custom of the culture of Iran and or religious customs of that country? In considering these questions, the standard of review here for the court is that an abuse discretion. That's enumerated in Lee v. Lee. Furthermore, an operative question becomes whether a conclusion of the district court is against logic and the facts in the record as enumerated in Holmes and its progeny. And moving to the first issue, which is that of the bonus income.
I have a question there.
Yes, Your Honor.
Sometimes in these kinds of cases, person in your client's position will request that the judge just leave the question of bonus income for the future to see what happens in the future.
Sure.
Did you do that in this case?
Your Honor, I was not of record at trial, but that was not done at the trial record.
Okay,
no, Your Honor.
I was just curious about that.
As to the bonus income, as the court's well aware, in looking at DeRosa and its progeny, bonuses are essentially a form of periodic payment, and therefore they count as income. And if we go further to Wickham and that court's progeny, while Wickham rather citing DeStangel, a source of funds is income for child support purposes if it is a periodic and dependable source of income.
But didn't the court find it wasn't dependable?
Your Honor, what the court found was that it found that in particular, in regard to the 2022 bonus, the court's finding was that it would not continue. However, that actually conflicts with the record itself, as there is testimony from respondent himself that supports in the record that there was never anything from respondent stating that the bonus income would not continue. Rather, there was an assertion from respondent that it was not believed it would continue to that level. There was nothing further to support that it would end. Furthermore, while this is characterized by the court and its opinions as...
So,
Yes, sir.
So If it does continue, nothing constrains you from bringing a motion to modify support or maintenance because he's now getting these bonuses and they're continuing and, you know, they're right. Getting higher. Would that be a fair statement?
True, and that could be fair, Your Honor. But again, the fact here is that there was income from 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022 at least. That's all supported by the record. The court's assertion is that this was due to COVID factors, which 2019 in and of itself was pre-COVID, and furthermore, the fact that the court jumped to the conclusion that that would not continue is in and of itself consistent with Holmes against logic, because the respondent himself did not testify that it would end. Rather, it would not be at the same level that it was at in 2022.
What amount should it, I mean, if the court credited that, the district court thought that they would going to reduce, credited that testimony and decided that that was true, what amount, what difference does it make financially?
I mean, we're talking
dollars.
Yes, Your Honor. So, I mean, we're looking at the testimony. I believe it was 20, there was a bonus of about $12,000 that was in just of February of 22. In 2021, the total was $51,000 over two payments. So it begs that it's more of a question if it were sent down on remand for the court to actually calculate this and figure out perhaps a happy median of sorts as to what should be imputed, because nothing at all was imputed, even though evidence suggests and shows that there was indeed regular payments being made consistently to him in the form of a bonus.
So a remand would be required if we thought that the district court
yes.
erred by finding that they were not regular or consistent.
Yes,
have
Your
to
Honor.
Go back and determine how much it was. And there's not a, did the appellant put forward what that amount should have been at the trial or not?
You know, Your Honor, I believe that there was an assertion that it should be approximately, well, appellant argued at trial that it should be the whole amount, so that his monthly income was going to be roughly $1,000 higher when divvied out, and that the for the purposes of spousal maintenance and child support.
Into your second issue, the gold coin.
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you please clarify for me what you mean when you assert that the district court lacked jurisdiction over its apportionment of the 10 coins? Is it, what kind of jurisdiction are you saying it lacked? Was it authority, subject matter? What did you mean?
Sure, Your Honor. More that of authority, and I suppose some of subject matter, actually, because neither party asked for those gold coins to be divided. The testimony of respondent himself stated that he had no issue with the gold coins or the dowry or anything of that nature being given to respondent consistent or to petitioner to appellant rather consistent with the tradition and culture in Iran.
That assertion flies in the face of his spreadsheet that lists the marital gifts, which includes the gold coins, as I read it.
It does, I would say, Your Honor, it doesn't so much fly in the face of it rather than they are seeking an accounting of those items. They were not saying that he specifically was wanting those actual items. It was more he was seeking, as he testified to at trial, that there simply be an accounting of those in evaluation. The court gave
so
no...
He wanted... valued and
yes.
It could count in her side of the ledger.
Yes,
so
Your Honor.
He gets, and that would change then to marital property. It's just instead of dividing the physical coins, it does it just by dollars.
Exactly.
But
Your
then
Honor.
The court said no one gave me the right values, right? I don't have a
the court didn't
determine.
Right. The court didn't actually make any determination as to the valuation of the gold coins. The testimony, frankly, in the record on the valuation is spotty at best.
That leads me to my next question. Can you point to any testimony or evidence in the record to support your client's claim that the coins were her non-marital property?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I watched the video,
Yes, Your Honor.
Which was very interesting, except I don't speak Farsi, and I didn't see a translation or some sort of transcript in English. Did
right.
I miss something?
No, Your Honor, I didn't see one either, and nor do I speak Farsi. What I would say, Your Honor, is in regard to the support that it's hers, what's specifically in the record, as is briefed, is the testimony from the parties regarding the cultural tradition and the fact that once an action were to be initiated, which appellant, or rather respondent himself, testified he planned to bring an action in that culture and religion, that those items would be reverted back to appellant. There were certainly some, as is again highlighted in the briefs, that does go to respondent, but the gold itself, the gold coins themselves, were to, subject to Iranian culture and religious tradition, go revert to appellant.
Except that then I'm looking at Exhibit 132. Which is the spreadsheet.
Yes.
Where there are different gold coins listed. So, for instance, he says that the coin from his grandma goes to him, but that the coin from his uncle goes to both of them.
Right. And that conflicts, and that is, Your Honor, admittedly, that's an issue or a situation where it simply is a matter of conflicting testimony. As the testimony provided by appellant is that gold coins do go to her as part of the dowry slash marital gift property in that culture. And I am not an expert on Iranian culture nor religious tradition, so I do not know, nor is there ample testimony to give us much direction as to where these things actually go or what actually the law is and the customs are, but both parties did.
How did the court abuse its discretion?
The court abused its discretion as both parties stated they had no issue with appellant receiving the coins. Again, respondent himself testified that he had no issue with that. He simply wanted an accounting.
Well, that goes to Judge Smith's question then, that it wasn't the dowry, which is totally separate from the marriage property, but he wanted an accounting. She could keep the gold coins, but he
right.
wanted something to go into his side of the ledger.
Right. And I think that would certainly be something within the realm of the court's discretion, certainly. However, the issue here remains that by doing it the way they did, the court abused their discretion, as there is no valuation on the coins, and there is no determination as to where what coins exist and where those are going beyond the record, nor is there any valuation of them, and therefore, as there's no valuation, it makes it extremely more difficult to actually parse out the property itself.
Well, part of that issue was, as I understand it, that your client sold some of the coins during the pendency.
Yes, Your Honor. And even that record itself is not clear, as there's not a clear determination as to what was sold and what it, and whatever was sold, what it actually was. As the court, as Your Honors have all three of you, I think, have pointed out at this point, there were multiple types of coins in play here. And so each coin likely is going to have a different value, especially as it is gold. We're not talking about just, you know, pieces of paper. And therefore, we have issues when we look at dividing these things and whether that division was equitable or not.
But isn't, yeah, I understand your argument that it couldn't divide the coins because that interferes with, you know, the religious
right.
rights, right? But it seems like underlying it is it would have been fine. No one put in evidence of the coins. It's fine to give a monetary value to them and to divide that property in that way.
Right.
Which seems, well, not that different. Or maybe the district court has said, you haven't given me any testimony about how much they're worth. You guys sell those coins and divide them.
Right.
Is that a problem?
I don't think that would be as much of a problem. I think there's still an inherent issue as to the reality here that both parties asserted at various points in testimony that they were going to be somehow engaging in an Iranian cultural dissolution or separation proceeding. And both parties have made testimony supporting that, at least on some level, those coins, at some point, some of them, if not all, are subject to rules and regulations pursuant to that. So there is perhaps an argument there or an issue there if the district court even did place a monetary value and actually make a division. However, at the very least, by making a valuation determination, what the court itself does in doing that is it actually is adhering to the idea of being specific in so far as the allocation of the marital estate, and then the issue as to whether or not they should have been doing that is another issue, obviously, as well. But by assigning a value, that actually does kind of help at least to move this case in a direction where it actually is more conducive to logic in that regard. I see I only have a few seconds left here, so just briefly, getting back to the bonus income piece again, Your Honors, I would just say that, you know, we look at the fact that there was regular income over a period of years as bonus. We look at the fact that the court's reasoning for finding that it should not be factored was based upon no expert testimony whatsoever, and frankly, the reasoning of the court went beyond even the testimony provided of respondent, as respondent's own testimony did not say that the bonuses would cease. I would yield the rest of my time with this argument, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We now hear for counsel for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mary Hahn, and I am here on behalf of Respondent Navid Tabrizi. I'm going to start with the coin issue, if I may. I had to try to pull apart the strings that the appellant has mushed together in her argument, and let me try to do that briefly. The first question is the argument that the court had no jurisdiction over the coins, or rather that the court designated them as marital versus non-marital property? What issue was appellant even raising? And if you review her brief carefully, it appears to be jurisdiction, that the district court allegedly had no jurisdiction over the coins. Of course it did. The court found properly that it did. And here, I have not ever had occasion to cite to an original petition for dissolution at the Court of Appeals, so today is my first time, but to state the obvious, if we review the original petition filed by Ms. Tabrizi in her prayer for relief, she asks that the court distribute the party's property. She herself brought the property before the jurisdiction of the court. Next, one case that came up repeatedly is the Templeman case. Appellant cited that at the district court level. Let me talk about the Templeman case very briefly, because the district court in our case squarely addressed it. It's not even that it's distinguishable, it is that it does not apply at all to these facts. The Templeman case is where this court determined that on issues of doctrine, schisms within a church that involved doctrinal matters of faith, first, you must exhaust your remedies through the church process or through the religious process, unless issues of property and civil rights are involved. So our court shot down Templeman, if you will, which appellant tried to rely on, saying that does not apply, and the district court had jurisdiction over the coins. The next problem that, when I say the strings were all mushed together, or tangled together might be a better analogy, the entire argument on appeal appears to be that it's based on a faulty premise. As Your Honors have pointed out, these coins were part of the gifts, not the dowry, And the court expressly found this, and they're on Exhibit 132. So as gifts, we don't even get into the jurisdictional religious piece. We can stop there. Even if the court had found they were part of the dowry, again, for the same reasons, the court has jurisdiction over the coins. And it was perfectly rational, and there was a basis to simply divide them. There's about 10 coins. Ms. Tabrizi had no idea what the value was. She had already sold three. The court expressly found she was not credible concerning what she received for those coins. So the court did what probably many of us would do and say, just divide them. Just divide them.
If they're part of the dowry, is the implicit argument by here that that's non-marital property? And what makes them marital property if they're part
well,
of the
I would argue all of this, because she came before this court system, all of it is subject to the court's jurisdiction to determine whether those gold coins are marital versus non-marital.
Okay.
And there, the testimony from Mr. Tabrizi, if you dig into the transcript, which I did, the testimony from Mr. Tabrizi is, no, these coins were the gifts. The attorney was asking questions that kept conflating the issue. The dowry gifts. Mm-mm. Dowry? Gifts. And that is what Mr. Tabrizi made clear. So as gifts, then of course it's up to the court to determine, should it be, is it marital? And that's in fact what the court determined. I hope.
Well, I guess, all right, so there's a distinction between dowry and gifts.
Absolutely.
And the district court then decided it wasn't dowry, it was a gift.
Correct.
And because it was a gift, it's marital property.
Yes, but there's more to it. I think the court also, and the court was able to really give even more explanation when post-trial motions were done, and the court issued what it called a subsequent modification of findings. I don't think the court was even concerned whether it was dowry or gifts at this point, although the court had found it was gifts. And the reason I say that is because the court directly said Templeman does not apply.
Right. I'm out of temper.
Oh, okay.
Templeman, I'm not interested.
Gotcha.
I mean, I'm not asking about the
gotcha.
Authority. I'm just wondering about the non-marital versus marital thread of this, what you describe as a tangle.
Yes.
If it were dowry, would it be non-marital?
I don't think that is the case. I would not stand here and say that. I think it would depend on the facts introduced at the trial. So moving the other piece to kind of finish up the coins, the weakness in appellant's argument, I think, is emphasized if you read appellant's reply brief. This is where it really falls apart, in my opinion. And here's what I mean by that. Furthermore, and I'm reading from the page 3 and 4, as neither party raised the issue at trial, meaning should this be determined by a religious court, it is logical to infer this was likely a product of both parties knowing it would be addressed in the future. Let's stop there. Neither party addressed it at trial. Procedurally alone, this court can stop there. It was not an issue preserved at trial. In her own petition for divorce, she put the issue of division of property before the court. There was not even a request at trial, hey, let's carve these coins out because a church in Iran is going to decide them. That was never brought up, never said. This is a classic inappropriate gotcha on appeal, respectfully. If the coins had been awarded to her, we wouldn't be here, I suspect. I'd like to turn to the bonus, if I may.
So I'm glad you're turning there.
Sure.
As I understand the record, in 2019, he testified that he received $15,000 in bonus. Everyone agrees that's pre-COVID. And a bonus of $29,000 in 2020, $46,000 in 2021, and $52,000 in 2022. It seems like these are significant sums to exclude from income calculations. And why are those bonuses over those for 5 years not a dependable source of future income?
Well, first of all, I'm not aware of the $50,000 in bonuses in 2022. When I was reading the findings, the court gave an average monthly income of $13,480 for 2022, exclusive of bonuses. And let me talk about why, respectfully, the court's decision on bonuses should be affirmed. We look at the findings of fact holistically and the distribution of property holistically. We do not want to cherry pick pieces without looking at the whole. And the district court is allowed to look at the whole upon post-trial motions, and this court is as well. So let's think about the factors that the court specifically referenced in its findings. We have Mr. Tabrizzi working at a mattress company during COVID. Big bonus for this sleep mattress company during COVID. So an unusual set of circumstances there. By the time of trial, Mr. Tabrizzi had two jobs. He is working at Target in order to make ends meet. Next, this is not a case where the judge gave Ms. Tabrizzi zero maintenance. Rather, she asked for $6,000 a month. She was awarded $4,000 a month. So the judge is awarding her $4,000 a month for 4 years. In addition to that, about $1,600 a month for child support. Mr. Tabrizzi is working two jobs. Mr. Tabrizzi testified, both parties are healthy, both parties can work. He testified and explained already by the time of trial what was happening to the production lines at the sleep company. And things were slowing, and he didn't anticipate receiving those types of bonuses. I would argue it is not up to him to say, I will never receive another bonus in order for this court to be affirmed, because that would be ridiculous unless he literally had a letter saying you will never receive another bonus. That is a standard that is unlikely or not logical. So when you take the whole and the holistic of what Mr. Tabrizzi was doing to maintain the households and and what is notable to me in this day and age, I'm sorry, but Ms. Tabrizzi was assigned zero income for the child support calculation. And she got credit for zero income. Now, hopefully, she will be someday having a job. But this court gave a lot of financial cushion, if you will, to Ms. Tabrizzi to give her time to get on her feet. So when you take this all as a whole, we cannot say the court clearly erred in not counting his bonus income. And I would respectfully point the court's attention to the Haskins case, which in that case, and that is cited in my brief, and in that case, the bonuses varied greatly. That is cited at page 11 of my brief, from zero to $9,000 in those days. And this court said the court had discretion, or didn't err, I should say, to find that, to not include the bonuses, because it was so uncertain. And I think this district court was compelled by the fact that Mr. Tabrizzi was working two jobs to make ends meet, and did give an arguably a generous award of maintenance. So I will leave it there unless there's more questions. Yes.
We have a question. Can you tell me what the record evidence says about bonuses in 2021, 2022?
Yes, I've cited and about bonuses. Okay.
How much?
Oh, the amounts?
Yes.
Oh, the amounts.
If
okay.
The record tells us what the amounts were.
All right. Let's look at it would be listed in the amended findings of fact, which is included in my addendum,
okay,
starting at page 24. And the discussion about bonuses, I think it's kind of in a couple of places, as I recall. But if I look at
Starting at Appendix 29, Respondent's Appendix, there is finding of fact 20, subpart G. And the court goes into, this is the factor about respondent's ability to meet his needs while meeting those of petitioner. And it says he earned $109,367 for 2019.
Which page are you on again?
It's Respondent's Addendum 29.
Sorry.
Page 6 of the...
I should have printed off. This is the problem with electronic. Okay.
I'm going to miss these briefs. I'm just...
Right. I'm there.
When we can't print them anymore, I'm going to miss them.
Go ahead.
Yes. Okay. So I had to sort of read between the lines here. In year 2020, he earned $135,000. 2021, then the judge switched to an average, a monthly average, you'll see, of $12,554. And then in the top of RD 30, page 7, the court says respondents' increase in income via bonus was due to COVID, resulting in people being at home working on home projects. And the court continues about 2022, which is when trial occurred. And petitioner indicates respondent's gross income, now this is petitioner's allegation, income minus bonus is $13,008. And here is where the court, in this finding, the bonuses will most likely not continue due to the slowdown of consumer purchasing. And this is where the court also says respondent is struggling to make ends meet, resulting in the second job. And so what...
From this, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's discernible ones from different sources. If you start backing out from the monthly income, I mean, I don't know when it's talking about the gross monthly income of $13,000 for 2022, if that includes bonus income.
So can what we, the court then... Sorry, I'm going to just jump. I wrote this down because I anticipated that finding of fact 34, respondent's gross monthly income... $13,856 excluding bonuses. So that is at page 34 of my addendum.
So how do we know? I mean, because the question came up of what the bonus was in 2022. How do we know what the bonus was from, do you know?
I don't.
I see.
I do not know. And I'm wondering why, that's why I said, where did this $55,000 come from?
And you don't know,
no.
Based on the record, what the... Although there is a bonus in 2022, you don't know what amount that was.
I'm not even sure there was a bonus, but I do know what the court found. The court found said... The court finding... Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm out of time, but if I may finish
Please. My
sentence. The court finding was $13,856 excluding bonuses. So that is what I'm relying on, what the court found.
Well, it also found respondent received a bonus in the year 2022, the next sentence.
Yeah.
So, okay, well.
Yes.
It seems sort of important, if there's evidence about that, to know whether there was a regular, continuing, virtually the same bonus amount. Then it all relies on the testimony that there's not his testimony.
Right.
To continue.
Yes,
okay.
That is correct. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Hent. Mr. Ficini, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You're welcome.
So I want to clear up the bonus issue a little bit. It looks like I may have misspoke, so I apologize for that. As indicated in my brief, the $51,000 is for 2021. So that might cause some help given the discussion that was going on earlier.
And where did you get that figure?
Yes, I can pull it right now. That is from the testimony on July 27th. That's from the transcript. It's also cited in my brief. Specifically, page 17 of that transcript, lines 1 through, I'd say, 12. And if the court even wanted to look at the preceding page, 16, that line of questioning kind of starts around line 17 by Mr. Robinson, who was counsel for appellate at the district court level into the bonus for 2021. Again, on the bonus piece,
Was there a 2022 bonus? Do you know what the amount was?
There's not much testimony on that, Your Honor, unfortunately. Again, the court delineates that there was a bonus, mm-hmm. but as even counsel stated on her argument, there's not a whole lot of color around that. Again, the exhibits that do show there were bonuses prior, but there's nothing as far as I didn't see a specific amount for 2022, unfortunately. I do believe the trial court had ordered some updated income information to be supplied, but I don't see that that necessarily was applied or was supplied, rather. Regarding the bonus, again, we have a regular payment here. That's kind of the catch-all, is this is a regular payment. It's been occurring over a period of years. The argument that, oh, well, there was a financial cushion given to appellant, again, that's something that's a different question as to why the court found what they found regarding earning capability, et cetera, and the court gave findings as to that. That does not relieve the fact that by finding that the bonus, which has been occurring over a period of time regularly, and as the court has pointed out, are not insubstantial amounts of money, that should still be counted in some way, shape, or form. And case law is clear on that. By not counting it, that is where the court is flying in the face of logic. Regarding the coins, perhaps a more trickier issue, certainly, but on face, not really, because there either needs to be some sort of a determination that as a product of the fact of both parties said they were going to be engaging in, at some point, the cultural dissolution process. They didn't use quite those words in their testimony, obviously, but that needs to be something that is allowed. By coming in and disturbing that, when, again, even appellant or even respondent himself, his own testimony, supports the conclusion that he's not looking for the coins, he just needs evaluation, that is where the court overstepped here. As, again, these are something that would have been dealt with otherwise, and even if this court were to say, well, no, they do get to deal with it, there's the question, well, why wasn't there evaluation placed when the testimony regarding how many coins were sold, how many coins were left, is muddy at best. For these reasons, Your Honors, I would ask that the court grant the relief requested by appellant, and I will yield the rest of my time.
Thank you very much, counsel, for the appellant, counsel, for the respondent. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.